Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:45 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is January 6th, and I still think that the 5-year yield is by far the most relevant of all charts everywhere, because it continues to trend higher. And this breakout we saw right at the beginning of the year continues to be extended, and it was certainly supported yesterday by the Fed minutes that came out after the close. And when we think about what the Fed is doing, well, they're keen to rearm their interest rate weapons and their monetary accommodation weapons, and they have a whole suite of additional tools that they deployed in the pandemic that we can have every confidence will be deployed again in the next crisis. So I think there's certainly an effort underway at the Fed to talk the market down without, in fact, engaging in a lot of activity. So they are tapering the amount of stimulus. But what they're talking about is raising interest rates soon after March. And it might even happen at the March meeting. And then they're also talking about the runoff of the balance sheet. Now, that's quantitative tightening. And quantitative tightening was one of the primary supports for the dollar all the way through 2018 and into 2019. So that's something that we certainly have to pay attention to. If they start restricting the supply of new money coming into the market, well, then that's bullish for the dollar. And the dollar does continue to firm. So this is still an uptrend, and it has bounced pretty emphatically from the 95 area, so that's rather encouraging from the perspective of dollar bulls, and it's a fundamental support for the dollar overall. And that's obviously taking a toll on precious metals. So gold prices today were down and back below the $1,800 area. And silver was down a dollar. I think it's important to highlight with gold that it's been ranging in a volatile manner for a year, and it has failed to sustain breaks above the 1850 area, and we still have a sequence of lower major rally highs. So that's still intact. We also have a sequence of higher major reaction lows. So we're still in a more or less a triangular pattern, although I would argue that that pop on the upside in November broke the triangular pattern overall. So now the question, of course, is going to be where will gold find support? And it has obviously got the headwind of a stronger dollar, and then also the fact that negative real interest rates aren't as negative as they used to be, and that that rate is narrowing. So those are rather important facts. But when we come back to the rising yields factor, this is obviously something that's going to weigh on investor sentiment, because it increases the cost of funding for everything. So for example, we saw that mortgage rates today were the highest they've been since the beginning of 2020, up to about 3.22%. So obviously that is a factor in some of the less than ebullient risk-seeking behavior. And when we then think about the NASDAQ 100, well, it was a little steadier in here today, but it was trading around a lot. And of course, one of the reasons it's beginning to pause around this level is because it's the lower side of the range that's been ongoing now for nearly 2 months, but it also coincides with the peak from back in September. And the defining characteristic of the trend that's been underway since the lows in 2020 has been the ability of the index to range and break out, and each of the breakouts has been sustained. So now we're right at the lower side of the range. It's an area where we might anticipate some support beginning to be found. But if yields continue to march higher, well, then that's going to make it a more difficult feat to find support in this area. And with the Federal Reserve talking about reducing its purchases, reducing the quantity of new money entering the market, and even talking about accelerating the pace with which it's willing to take money out of the market, well, then that's not great news for the big or the large number of companies that are heavily dependent on access to cheap, abundant liquidity. So when we then think about the ARK Innovation ETF, which was the star performer in 2020, it was off its lows in here today, and it is oversold in the short term, but it's got a lot of work to do in order to demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And I am rather hesitant to think that a low of anything other than extraordinarily short-term significance has been found here. Risk assets generally will require the yields to start coming back down. So there are big questions that are going to be asked here. And when we think about what kind of template do we have for activity? Well, I thought I would just highlight on the chart here the S&P 500 because it pulled back by about 10% at the beginning of 2018. That followed one of the most epic portions of this bull market because in 2017, right after the Trump tax cuts were begun to be priced in, the market did not pull back by more than 3% or 5% for the whole year. And then it pulled back by about 10% when Jay Powell was brought in as head of the Federal Reserve because that was an uncertainty. And he started off his tenure with some calming statements, but they did not stop raising interest rates and they did not stop the quantitative tightening program. So stock markets more or less went sideways for all of 2018 and briefly pushed on to new high ground. And it was around that time that Jay Powell made the statement that interest rate hikes and quantitative tightening were on remote control. And the market didn't like that and swiftly pulled back by 20%. And a 20% pullback between September and Christmas was enough to chasten the Fed, and Steve Mnuchin basically convened the plunge protection team by having a meeting of all the CEOs of the major investment banks all at once on Boxing Day of 2018. That helped to put a floor under the market. The Federal Reserve started to make calming statements. They stopped raising interest rates. And in December, the total assets of central banks started to push back upwards again, and it certainly stopped contracting at that point, and the stock market started to recover. So a 20% pullback was required to chasten the Fed on that occasion, which would suggest that the market would have to pull back to about 4,000 in order to really deter the Federal Reserve from its course of action. And right now, the market is only 3 or 4 days off the peak. And so far, at least, and I think this is relevant, we had a breakout in the period right before New Year. And right afterwards, we're looking at the potential for a failed upside break. And a failed upside break following a really impressive advance, which has been characterized by ranges and breakouts, well, then that's a significant trend in consistency. And downside follow-through would be an additional trend in consistency. And it would at least suggest that we're coming back down to test the region of the 200-day moving average and potentially a deeper correction than that. My gut feel at the moment, at least, is that we're due about a volatility and that it's about time that stock markets begin to price in some uncertainty with regard to Fed policy. So I think that we're in a more risk-off environment at present, and that's going to last as long as bond yields are pushing higher. When we then think about what should happen next, well, the Federal Reserve is probably going to raise rates at least once, and their ability to persist in that policy is likely to be heavily influenced by the performance of the stock market. So if the stock market pulls back in a violent manner in response to the prospect of quantitative tightening, well, then that is something that's going to weigh on the Federal Reserve's ability to follow through on that policy. And there's the real possibility that we're going to have one and done in terms of interest rate hikes. Then we can also think about what is likely in terms of government policy and whether the US government is going to be able to push through additional spending measures when the cost of financing the debt is rising at such a rapid rate. So that's also likely to be dollar positive. So these are factors that could contribute to further ranging in the gold price. But then we have oil prices, and oil is pushing higher. And we're in a rather, I think, odd environment for oil producers. Historically, the biggest point of certainty that oil producers have had is in demand growth. They've been able to model demand growth reasonably accurately for decades because it was so predictable. But because of the pandemic and the introduction of work from home practices and fewer people commuting, and then the additional questions about lockdowns with regard to the pandemic, and of course, then the evolution of electric vehicles and government policies being put in place to try and inhibit carbon emissions, the demand growth outlook for fossil fuels is more uncertain today than it has probably ever been. So, with so much uncertainty, then producers require higher prices overall to encourage new supply into the market. There is an additional risk premium, and that hurdle has to be overcome in order to justify additional spending measures. So we're definitely seeing the private production sector starting to tail back their estimates of exploration and production budgets. OPEC has said that they will increase supply, but their supply increase increment is quite modest. So that's helping to support prices. And this range has persisted for 6 years. So there is the potential that we're going to see a quick run-up towards $100. Now, at the same time, inflationary pressures in other parts of the economy are beginning to moderate. The Baltic Dry Index has completely unwound the spike higher seen in the first half of 2021, and it's now back in the region of the upper side of the base formation. So this is about where it needs to find support. Then we also have the questions about the prices paid by manufacturers, because those are also starting to come back down, and they've generally been a lead indicator for inflationary figures. So there's the real possibility that inflation has already peaked, and then some of the supply chain snarls, particularly in semiconductors, well, they're still acute, but not chronic. So it's quite likely that those supply problems are also going to be addressed by the end of the first half of this year. But if inflationary pressures are starting to come back down and oil prices are starting to rise, well, this is a recipe also for slower growth. Because if growth were to continue to increase, well, then even if supply chain issues were moderating, they would be overcome by higher growth and demand. But if oil prices are rising, it's likely to inhibit demand, and that suggests that growth will moderate. So that also should begin to have an impact on the Federal Reserve's and other central banks' ability to raise rates and reduce assistance. But it's not all going to occur at once, and we might have to see several months of data to confirm that hypothesis before it would be incorporated into central bank policy. So that also suggests that we're in for a more volatile time with central banks and with assets overall. And we can think about the rather sharp pullbacks we've seen in stock markets today. So Europe was off its highs and is susceptible to some additional weakness. The Australian ASX 200 is working on a rather large downside weekly key reversal. So this is also suggesting a peak of at least near-term significance. And the CSI 300 in China was right back on the lower side of its range. But one thing that I think is particularly relevant is that the property sector is still quite steady. That's despite the fact that individual property developers are on the cusp of bankruptcy, and the number that are approaching bankruptcy is increasing by the day. But the performance of the stock market index, or the sector, is largely representative of the state-owned sector, whereas those companies that are under acute problems are mostly privately held. So that suggests that we're looking at the potential for nationalization of much of the Chinese property developer sector. And in doing so, they will affect a deleveraging process. And that's probably more favorable than introducing a property tax. Now, the property tax might occur eventually, but introducing it would have to be done from a significant position of strength, and we're just not at that point right now. It's quite likely that deleveraging will have to happen first and a property tax introduced afterwards. What it suggests is that the likelihood is that China is going to engage in some monetary and fiscal accommodation within the first quarter, and the Golden Dragon index of US-listed Chinese shares continues to try to find support. And that's pricing in, or at least beginning to price in, the scope that China is going to provide additional liquidity. So as we look at what's likely in the short term, it looks like Wall Street in particular, and other markets as well, are susceptible to mean reversion. And it might be a reasonably severe pullback is required to chasten the Fed. And at the same time, we've had a significant pullback in Chinese assets, and there is increasing evidence that the People's Bank of China is sufficiently chastened that they may start to ease up. So we're in an environment where there's some visibility on where liquidity might come from in the first half, but we're not quite at a point where it's being released yet. And in that, I guess, gap, we can see mean reversion occur on a significant number of shares. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.